BlizzCast, your official Blizzard podcast.
Welcome everyone back to BlizzCast. We have a special episode today for you guys, our WWI follow-up. And my name is Karun, your RTS community manager. Here we also have Nathera.
Hello everyone.
Our World of Warcraft community manager. And also we have our new community manager for Diablo 3, Bashyak.
Hey, how's it going?
Who sounds oddly familiar with Drisk.
I do not at all.
No, not at all. Completely different.
So, getting back from WWI, what'd you guys think of the whole thing, especially the Diablo 3 announcement?
I thought it was awesome. Just the entire experience of being there, you know, knowing what was coming up by, you know, being involved, obviously, on the project, and just that anticipation. I think it was in the front row with my head in my hands, just, you know, waiting for the reaction to the announcement, and it was just an overwhelming explosion of noise behind me. When everybody was just cheering and going off.
Oh my gosh, yeah, so crazy. I mean, Nathera, it was your first time in Paris as well, right?
That's correct. It was just a fabulous experience, and it was so great to be able to go over there and be a part of the event. And, you know, mentioning Diablo 3, of course, being able to actually say Diablo 3 now is a huge, you know, burden gone.
Yeah.
And just from the very first, whenever you heard that first chord of you know, music, and everybody knew what happened, and you got goosebumps immediately. And again, I just got goosebumps just thinking about it, because it's such an emotional connection to the game and to those sounds. And you know, there was kind of a hush as soon as everybody heard it, as people started to realize what was happening and waiting for that first moment.
So yeah, much anticipation. Oh my gosh, I just remember sitting in the front row and then turning back and being like, wow, everybody was just holding their breath, and like everybody's on their computers ready to like just press enter and, you know, submit everything that they see. It was so crazy. I mean, it's great being surrounded by so many people, you know, with the same interests.
It was a standing room only, obviously. And yeah, it was a really cool way to intro. It was having the guitarist come out and just play those first few chords, and then launched pretty much straight into the cinematic. And I don't think people were, they knew what was going on, I think, but it seemed like they reserved their massive applause for the really like the end of the cinematic when the Diablo head came out, and they're like, okay, it's Diablo, and then that logo shows up with a 3, and they're like, okay, here it is, and just everybody went completely off the wall.
Well, and it was almost as if everybody was afraid of making noise and interrupting their own experience,
yeah,
you
definitely.
Know?
It was like a staggered, like, oh my gosh!
Right, yeah. No, it was a very powerful moment, I think, for all of us.
For sure. So what did you guys think about some of the other events that were going on at WWI afterwards? Dev panels and, you know, maybe some of the esports matches that were going on?
There was so much to take in, and you know, I tried to get around, you know, wherever I could. I was having a good time being able to interact with some of our fan sites that were out there as well. So, you know, that was great getting to meet people face to face. But you know, it's just great whenever you get a chance to actually see a live match and hear, you know, Bunny calling it out and doing the shoutcast and everything. It's just so exciting to be there and you know, see everybody just taking it all in and concentrating on the action going on the screen and, you know, getting into it with everybody else and being able to do a little geek out with everybody, you know?
I mean, the excitement levels had a peak, like, the whole time through. For every single event, I saw it, too. I mean, even the demo stations for StarCraft II and Wrath of Lich King, they were always, like, very, very full.
Yeah, long lines. It was a full-blown event. There was all sorts of activities. Like, we had a signing table where you get signatures from, like, some of the lead artists and designers and developers. And there was the TCG section, I think, where people could go play the WoW TCG.
Oh, they had that huge turtle too.
Yeah,
turtle mount.
The huge, the TCG turtle mount was like actually there, you know, modeled out of, I don't know what, but people could go and sit on it and take pictures.
They also had the new miniature game as well for people to check out.
Oh yeah, that was cool too.
That was there, uh-huh.
Very. Yeah. They gave away some of those with the goodie bags too.
Yes, they did.
Every goodie bag came with a WoW mini, I guess.
That's very cool too, the whole backpack kind of thing. Everybody was running around with all their
goodies. Yeah, it was awesome. I was able to stuff other stuff in, you know, in that backpack they gave us. So everybody got one that went to the event. So it doubled as, you know, a nice carry-all for the t-shirts. That was another thing, the cool the store, I guess, that you could go there and buy like posters and t-shirts. There was Diablo 3 t-shirts.
the launch of that definitely was huge right after the announcement.
Yeah, they were smart and had, we had two stores, so we were able to, I guess, fill orders.
So, I mean, do you guys remember the fire dancers? That was quite a sight to see as well.
After the D3 announcement?
Yeah. That was incredible. Yeah. That was so cool to watch, and you know, watching them manipulate that fire and sitting there thinking, you know, that close and they're going to burn themselves.
I was pretty sure someone was going to die.
If you guys haven't seen it already, you guys have to go check it out. On we have a video following up on WWI at the EU video or EU WWI website. Actually, you could probably pull it up on YouTube as well. I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of videos on that. Yeah, it was really entertaining to see, and it was great because it debuted with some brand new music for Diablo 3 as well. So,
yep, yeah. The Nihilum had some live raids, I think, going on, which I watched some of.
How were those?
It was pretty cool. I mean, I'm not like an endgame raider by any stretch, so it was a lot of fun to see people there. You know, actually doing the instance live, giving commentary on what they're doing, how the fights were progressing and all that.
I think that's something we're planning on doing more, right? Making sure, really getting the community really involved with, you know, BlizzCon, WWI, and making sure a lot of these people who put a lot of work into, you know, what they're building in these communities to really be spotlighted, represented, kind of shown.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important to kind of bring some of the larger players to the forefront. We've been doing it for so long for, like, you know, the StarCraft pro gamers and stuff like that, but these arena guys, the end game raiders, they're just as hardcore, if not more, and they're really into this stuff. So
yeah, so many exciting people, like, who dedicate so much time to this, and they come up with stuff that, you know, we couldn't have even imagined developing the game.
Yeah, I think there's a point where the players can surpass the developers to some degree in their dedication to the game, which is exciting and scary at the same time.
Good stuff. Well, I guess we should probably cut to your interview.
Yeah, I interviewed the lead designer on Diablo 3, Jay Wilson, talking about his experience at WWI, development on Diablo 3, and some of the topics that have come up since the announcement, some of the hotter topics. So it's going to be fun. Get ready for it.
BlizzCast, your official Blizzard podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to BlizzCast, the WWI special edition. I'm Bashiok, your Diablo community manager. I'm here with Jay Wilson, lead designer on Diablo 3. How you
Hello.
Doing, Jay?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. So you were obviously at WWI with a bunch of other guys from the team. Mm-hmm. What did everybody think of the announcement that was there, or maybe wasn't there, your family, friends, when you came back?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think everybody was really excited. The announcement, you know, we were really happy with how it all pulled off. You know, we had so many different groups in the company, like, supporting us and trying to make it something really special. And we think, you know, we were really happy with how it turned out. And also really happy with how people received it. You know, we expected people to like what we were doing, but, you know, when you see something every day and you work on it for years, you don't really know how people are going to react. And the overall response was so positive and people seemed so happy. So that was really exciting for the whole team.
Yeah, I agree. The applause and cheer and everything while we were there was overwhelming.
Yeah, the group that was there that we presented the gameplay demo was like 10,000-11,000 people. And
right,
when 10,000 people all yell at you in good, you know, not angry, but, you know, just right, you know, happily, you know, it's like a physical force. It's pretty amazing.
Agreed. Yeah, it was a pretty powerful moment. While you were there, what was the most memorable moment for you outside of the actual announcement?
I think the thing I enjoyed the most was doing the autographs. You know, we had an autograph table there.
Yeah, the signing table.
Where we would sign posters and books, and people brought Diablo 2 manuals, and I think they were hoping, you know, they brought lots of stuff for us to sign, and it was really cool to be able to, like, talk to people one-on-one, have the whole, you know, whole little subsection of the team there. We had artists drawn, you know, little impromptu sketches and stuff in people's books, and that was really, really fun.
Yeah, who was it that was drawing houses?
Jeff Kang, one of our environment artists. He drew houses, and so I did a UI mock-up because I don't really have any drawing skills.
Right, a skill tree. That's exciting.
Yes, I didn't want to do a skill tree because, you know, it might end up on the net as the official skill tree for Diablo 3.
Right. So everybody's back from WWI now, have been for a while. Where is the development team focused right now? What is everybody working on?
Well, the team's pretty big, so we've got them kind of split up on different things. Most of the art team is actually working on the second act of the game, because a lot of the team is really production-focused now, or we're generating content for the most part. A lot of the tech and underlying engine and tool set is really solid. Most of the design team is still on Act 1 because we're working on refining and improving kind of, you know, quests and flow and just some of the kind of big game systems that, you know, we haven't really announced yet. So we've kind of dove back into content production as quick as we could.
Okay. And you mentioned art's moved on to Act 2, but design's on Act 1, more or less, or kind of split around. How much of the development time is actually charging forward to new acts, and how much has actually gone back and going back and retouching, I guess, old acts?
Mm-hmm. Well, we initially kind of work in a linear fashion. We've started at the beginning of the game and gone to the end, and there's a lot of different ways you can do it, but just because so many of our systems are progression oriented, it's just easier to start at the beginning.
Sure.
But you kind of want your best work, which you tend to do latest in the project, to be at the beginning of the game. So what we try to do is we focused on Act 1 for a long time because it was just kind of the core of our game and, you know, getting the gameplay fun, getting, you know, monsters could be cool and all those things. You know, once we felt like it was good enough, we moved on to Act 2. But you will come back to every act along the way, especially Act 1. We'll probably do a major kind of iteration on it later in the development cycle. It's pretty much how Blizzard works. Like, we have a tendency to, you know, iterate over and over again on everything we do. So we build something and then we rebuild it. And if we haven't rebuilt something 5 times, then it really doesn't deserve to be shipped. That's pretty much our policy.
So we're talking a lot about acts right now. Could you give any insight to the act distribution as compared to like Diablo 2, how many acts there would be?
We were originally going to go away from an act structure, mm-hmm. but we just found it felt so easily into that. And so we're going for a similar structure as Diablo 2.
Okay.
You know, it just kind of seemed natural. It felt right. So right now we're focusing on about the same length, about the same number of acts. I don't want to solidify because you never know what'll happen, but right now we're going for about the same.
And talking about Diablo 2, everybody that played Diablo 2 or plays it, I think a lot of people are going back and playing it since the announcement. They sort of understand the economy of Diablo 2 as a barter item based system. The gold that was dropped in Diablo 2 wasn't worth much. How do you see the economy in Diablo 3 developing? And are there going to be any goals to establish trade systems?
Well, Diablo at its core is basically a trader's game. I mean, if you look at, you know, other types of, you know, progression-based RPG games, World of Warcraft's a great example. World of Warcraft, the best items are, you know, held by the raiders. In Diablo, the best items are really held by the traders, those people who are really good at trading with other people. So we have no intention of destroying that. You know, design or that group of players. That being said, a bartering system is actually a very exclusionary trading system. It essentially favors a very small group of elite people. And it's not just that those people have entry into it, and it's that anyone who wants to gain entry into the trade system, anybody who wants to just trade items with other people, they have this huge barrier of entry. They just can't get into because they don't know the value of items. They don't know, you know, what's worth what. They don't know what they need. So, you know, an elite trader would probably say, oh, well, I like the fact that I have this exclusive knowledge, but he's actually denying himself customers, essentially, because there's no common language. And so a currency really provides a common language, and that's the point of a currency. So we do want to support some kind of currency. We don't want to do some of the stuff that Diablo 2 did where they actively kind of devalued gold. We really want to make gold or potentially another currency. It may not have to be gold. A valuable commodity that players can use to be able to trade items. That being said, it doesn't really prohibit item trading. Like, people can use items as a currency, and that's, you know, we have no intention of adding like a bind on pickup or bind on equip for, you know, if we did, it'd probably be for like quest items, not for actual functional like items what people use to hack down monsters and stuff. So there's nothing that's stopping a bartering in that system, but it does give people at least some kind of language. And, you know, if you've got two items and one's like, yeah, a little bit more valuable than the other, well, you can pad it with a currency as well. So
right.
It's really, we're just trying to allow more people to get into the trading game, because the more people are in it, the more fun it's going to be.
Of course. So moving on to, I guess the coolest thing about Diablo is the abilities, your hero class, which are, you know, destroying monsters with. At WWI, there was a lot of emphasis on art and design coming together to kind of create a cohesive ability. You need the effect to make it look cool, but you also need the design to make it function in a way that's interesting. But aside from the cool effects for the abilities, what really comes from design to request or, I guess, need an ability for a class? What, from a design perspective, what are you thinking about when you ask for an ability?
Well, there's a lot of different factors that go into ability selection. And some abilities are, you know, some abilities satisfy those factors a little differently, and that's fine. You know, you mentioned cool factor. That's an important one. You know, you want an ability to be cool. You want a class to be cool. So if he's going to be cool, his actions define that. So if he does cool stuff, well, then he's going to be a cool class. You know, the next one is you really want him to be archetypal. A great example with the barbarian is we really wanted him to be all about physical force. So we made some of his choices, like, you know, changes we made to leap attack, and it's a lot more forceful attack. It actually does AoE damage instead of a single target damage. We did those types of things to kind of enforce the fact that he's a very physical character. And then, you know, the next one would be we want each class to be unique. You know, what happens is, you know, a lot of players will request, oh, well, can we have 20 or 30 classes? And the answer would be yes, but a lot of them are going to be really similar. And we don't really want that. We want each class to feel very unique, have unique abilities that are key to them. But the one that probably defines them all is really function and challenge. As we create new enemies and new challenges for the players to face, a lot of the times giving the players the tools to face those challenges is in the form of an ability. If, you know, we introduce a character who is, or an enemy who's really good at, say, controlling the player. Maybe he's got like crazy slow attacks that just make it really hard to face him, especially if you're like a barbarian. Well, maybe the barbarian needs some kind of way to counter that. Maybe he needs an ability that prevents him from being slowed, or, you know, allows him to not get, you know, do get hits. And D2 had abilities, and Diablo 2 had abilities like that as well, like concentration and things like that. So it's function is one thing. The challenge of enemies, keeping a class archetypal, all those different things.
Very cool. So would you say that monster design somewhat influences ability design, or does it greatly influence ability design?
Greatly. Monster design and ability design go hand in hand. A lot of the times, creation of a particular monster will incite the need for a new ability or a new kind of capability on the characters, and vice versa. A lot of the times we, you know, when we think about like what monsters we want to put in the game, we think about, well, what can the player do? How can we challenge them in a way, given what we know about their strengths and weaknesses? So yeah, they go hand in hand.
So as you said, I guess the iteration process just goes right up until the end.
Yep. As long as we're adding new enemies, we're pretty much thinking about new abilities for the classes. And that becomes even a greater factor as we get, because we're approaching the game in a linear fashion. And a lot of the monsters right now, are fairly simple. They're fairly easy to contend with. You know, you pretty much just run through the first act and kind of one-shot everything because you're learning the game.
Right.
But even going into Act 2 and Act 3, which we already have a lot of monsters planned, the monsters are a lot more difficult, a lot more challenging, a lot more varied. And as a result, like once we get into those monsters really heavily, it's going to have a big impact on what we do with the classes.
Cool. Changing gears, onto the inventory. I think a lot of people notice that the inventory management system is changing from the, I guess you call it the Tetris-style grid system to a one-slot system where each item actually only takes up one slot.
Mm-hmm.
What were the reasons for changing the inventory system?
They're actually pretty simple. I know that there is a contingent of players who absolutely love the grid system, but for the most part, it's pretty unpopular with a lot of players. With the team in general, we have a lot more people who dislike it than like it. And general feedback we've gotten is a lot more people are happy that it's gone than are, you know, wish that it was still there. That being said, we recognize that the real purpose for the grid-based system, the really one of the coolest things was that it made the items feel a little more real because they were larger when you were interacting with them in your inventory. So we tried to keep that in mind and really change how the look of the items and the look of the icons so that when you open up your inventory, the items feel more real. We're actually not even happy with that. Like some of the feedback we got on just what people saw, you know, and the fact that there were, you know, people who were unhappy with it, it made us really go back and revisit that. And right now we're actually trying to design a new inventory that has even larger sized icons and makes the items feel very real. And that's, you know, that's a focus. We're trying to get the best of both worlds, but ultimately we made the decision just because it was not a very popular feature.
Could you comment on the actual bag system? I think some people saw the like small bags drop in the demo?
Currently in the game, we have a system where you have one inventory page and it's got, I think, I can't remember exactly how many, 16 slots, I think it's, or 12. So I can't, you know, that's how much you start with. And then you have four bag slots and each one of those slots, you can add items. And as you do, it expands the number of items on that page. But we're actually, that's one of the things we're potentially going to revisit as well. And we're kicking around a lot of ideas like, you know, bags that are item specific, they hold specific types of things, but generally we want people to be able to kind of upgrade their personal inventory in some way, either by removing things from their core inventory through these kind of additional bags or just expanding the inventory overall. But none of that's final. We're actually right in the middle of a big kind of redesign on that whole system.
Cool. On the same vein of item storage, anybody that played Diablo 2 to a great extent, or maybe medium extent, probably had item mules, which were characters created specifically just to hold items for your main characters. What are your thoughts on mules? Are those going to be coming back? Do we see a need for them in future Diablo titles?
Well, I think as long as there is limited inventory space, which pretty much as long as there's limited hard drive space, there's going to be limited inventory space. You're going to have people who are going to want a mule. Like, you want to store items. Storing items is fun. Like, collecting items is fun. That being said, the way that people had to do it in Diablo 2 was not fun at all. So what we're going to be looking at is, you know, we don't want to encourage muling. We don't want to make it the way people want to do, just simply because the way it was done in Diablo 2 wasn't fun. So we're going to make a lot of changes overall to how inventory is done. One of the first ones, probably, I think all these changes actually would be quite popular, which is one of them is just we're going to give people more inventory in general, just a little bit bigger inventory. It's also easier with a one slot system, actually, because you don't have the items kind of eating up so much screen real estate. You don't have the risk of a especially large item just destroying the inventory space, but, you know, creating tons and tons of room for lots and lots of little items. So we have a lot more control with that. The other one is we're going to give people lots of ways to expand and deal with your inventory. And that, you know, more info on that, you know, coming in the future. And then the last one is we really want to make it easy for you to be able to share and trade items with other people and other characters on the same account. We've talked about ideas like a shared stash or, you know, a mail system like World of Warcraft has, and we haven't nailed down exactly which one of those we want to do. But we're definitely going to do something like that. That's going to make it really easy for you. If you've got, you know, a witch doctor and a barbarian character and you find that awesome witch doctor drop and you want to share it, it'll be super easy to do that.
So I don't have to worry about my game closing after...
No more jumping into a game, dropping items on the ground and, you know, hoping that the game stays open or getting a friend to help out. No more of that. You should be able to do it on your own.
Awesome. Some fans of the grid-based system, though, argue that the size of the item in your inventory kind of equated to its value to some degree. If it was a huge item, it was, I guess, it would offset some of the power of the item. So like it had a grand charm and it took up three slots. So, you know, it was kind of you were weighing the advantage of actually holding an item in your inventory. Mm-hmm. What do you think about people that, I guess, hold that stigma?
I think there's some truth to that. Mm. Primarily with charms. But then I think anybody who looked at the charm system would probably say, yeah, but I don't want a bunch of charms taking up my inventory. Like inventories for inventory, charms should be separate. But as far as other items, like, oh, I'm not going to carry this suit of armor because it's really big and I can carry rings that will sell for more. That's not really much of a choice. I mean, it's pretty obvious what the best choice there is to carry smaller items. So there is some gameplay to that, but you know, so I don't want to dismiss it. It's not that, you know, pretty much like any design decision, there's a trade-off, but ultimately so many people disliked the grid system overall that the benefits of it just did not outweigh that general kind of aggravation that people had with it.
I agree. So from my viewpoint, probably a lot of people's viewpoint, the announcement was extremely positive. But it seems that a lot of the Diablo 2 players, or at least the hardcore Diablo 2 players, want to see the Necromancer come back, or maybe other classes coming back. Obviously, the Barbarians, one of the ones we're bringing from Diablo 2. What are your general feelings on bringing classes back from the previous games?
Well, for the core game, you know, the kind of initial release of Diablo 3, we really want to establish our own identity. Like, we don't want to just remake Diablo 2 or Diablo 1. We want to provide a unique game experience for people. So on that front, we're really only going to consider bringing back classes that we feel we can improve. The Necromancer is an awesome class. Actually, my favorite class from Diablo 2, and the class I'm currently playing the most of. So it's not that we just dislike him. We love the Necromancer, but part of his, you know, the issue we have is he was so well designed. I mean, you've got your corpse explosion, you've got your skeletons and pets and, you know, those, you know, hordes of those guys running around and killing things. You've got curses. Like, it's across the board, a very well designed class. And there's certainly some things we could do a little differently, but do we feel like we can make him so much better and change his core gameplay experience? If anything, we'd say, no, we really don't want to. Like, he plays too well. Whereas with the Barbarian, we really looked at the class and said, you know, he's cool, but he could be a lot cooler. And he could have a lot more that he does over the previous game. So, you know, that's kind of why the Necromancer is not being seen. I think a lot of people have looked at the Witch Doctor and said, oh, you know, the Witch Doctor is so similar to the Necromancer, they're not going to be there. You know, there's no chance for the Necromancer ever. I wouldn't ghost that far. We are trying to make sure that the Witch Doctor, while he has a lot of similarities, is very different overall. One of the core differences is that the Witch Doctor is very attack-oriented. If people remember back to the gameplay video, almost all the monsters that got taken out were taken out by the Witch Doctor, not by his pets. So that's kind of a key difference between him and the Necromancer. The Necromancer was very often, his pets were critical to being able to his damage output, whereas the Witch Doctor, he uses his pets more as a distraction and a utility. So we tried to keep them different enough so that there's the possibility down the road, but that would maybe be an expansion or something like that after we felt like we've kind of established the core Diablo 3 game. That being said, I would tell people not to expect to see any other Diablo 2 or Diablo 1 classes appear, you know, in the exact same form that they did. Like, if we did bring back another class, it would be a radical change.
Cool. And lastly, we're moving on to something that's created a bit of a stir, was critiques of the art style for Diablo 3. People feel that the tone isn't dark enough. It's too bright and colorful. There's a rainbow. What are the team's feelings on the sort of critiques that we've received?
The art question. This one's pretty complex. You know, I can first say that, you know, the response from the team has been that really what we've heard is kind of an overwhelmingly positive response. We know that there are some people who are very concerned with the overall tone of the game and tone of the art. Kind of what we wish we could do is take them through kind of this last, you know, 2.5 years of where we've basically created and dumped two complete art style directions. So I kind of go through and try and explain kind of all the reasons that we went into this decision. So the original two kind of art styles that we did were probably more in line with what some of the sample shots people put up online of kind of what they were hoping the game might look like. They're very dark. They were very monotone, a lot of grays, a lot of brown, not a lot of color. And the problem we had was that it didn't produce a very good game for us. Diablo is a game that you spend hundreds of hours in, as opposed to, you know, if you look at a lot of the kind of current round of very realistic, very grim, gritty games, you know, a lot of those are 5-6 hour games. So a gray brown environment gets old very quickly when you're playing it for, you know, hundreds of hours potentially. So really environment change was a critical part of Diablo 2, and what made Diablo 2 so compelling was the environments changed drastically very often. If your environments are all kind of gray brown, doesn't work. So the other one was that it was actually not very easy to play the game. Diablo is a game where you fight a lot of monsters, and not just a high number of monsters, but a lot of different types at once. I mean, you're facing, you know, 3, 4, 5 different types of enemies at a time. So being able to identify those enemies was critical. And what we found was, again, when we made the enemies kind of that very realistic, dark, gritty look like the environment, they all just kind of blended together. And again, it made the game not very fun. At that point, after we'd kind of done this twice and gone, wow, we really don't like the results here, we started going back to Diablo 2 in particular and looking at it and trying to figure out what Diablo 2 did that worked so well. What we found was that a lot of the ideas that made Diablo 2 work well just didn't translate well to 3D. We also found a very different game than a lot of us remembered, even though a lot of us played, you know, the game still, like, where a lot of us are still, you know, big Diablo 2 players, we still have kind of this idealized, vision of it, where we really remember, like, Durance of Hate and Act 1 dungeons. And we kind of conveniently forget, like, all the, you know, Act 2 deserts and the, you know, the really bright lava hell levels and things like that are filled with a lot of color. And when we saw that, we were kind of surprised, like, wow, look at how green the fields are in Act 1. Like, look at how much color is in this world. We also were kind of surprised by the monsters. The monsters are really almost garish in Diablo 2. They're very, very bright. And this makes them, you know, you'll have like a bright red fallen next to a bright blue, I think they're called Bloodhawks. Somebody's going to lambast me for not getting the name right. You've got a corrupt rogue who's bright white, and then you've got these, you know, big hulking Wendigos that are brown, and you know, you've got all these different color palettes all at once, and they're all very kind of out there and you know, garish. And the reason is so you can tell each one apart. You know, you've got a big guy who's brown, you've got a humanoid person who's white, you've got a squat humanoid who's red, you've got a bird figure who's blue. Like, each one has a different profile, each one has a different color, and they all really stand out. So we tried that idea, and it didn't work. Once you took that idea of kind of very bright, garish monsters and put them into a 3D environment, it was almost like taking a comic book character from the pages of a comic book and putting them in a movie. The suits don't translate. Those primary colors just don't work. With the higher resolution and things like that. So we had to explore other options. And essentially, you know, that's what brought us to this current art style, where we really focused on, a couple of things. One, we decided we did want to make a kind of a realistic looking world, but we also decided that realistic just does not equal gray and brown. The real world's filled with all kinds of colors. We also decided while we wanted to make a more realistic world, we didn't want to make a photorealistic world. Again, a lot of games are doing that. It's not really what Blizzard is about. We wanted to see if we could create a game that visually had an art style that was unique, stylized without being cartoony. So I know that's kind of a lot of information, but it's probably our biggest struggle with Diablo 3 was trying to get the art style right. And we're really proud of how it turned out. And so, that's just kind of my effort to explain how we got to where we are.
Perfect. I think also something that I heard around the office, we've been talking about the reaction to some degree, and one of the things I thought was really interesting was, tone in context.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to people listening just what that kind of means?
Well, there have been some great comments that we've seen on the forums some people have commented, for example, on the fact that after a fight's over, the bodies fade away. And this is done for physics. I mean, physics systems pretty much, if you want to keep a game running fast, you can't keep too many physics objects in the world. But then, it's a good point that, where's the massacre? I just killed a bunch of monsters, and that it makes the game feel like the tone is not quite right. So we're actually working on like a different way to handle bodies that we're hoping will result in, that same level of carnage. But it's all about getting that tone right, and that's something we focus a lot on. We really want to make sure that the tone of the game is right, that it's dark, that it's foreboding. And that's something that I think when people actually play the game, they're not gonna have any doubt that it's a Diablo game. Every person we've sat down in front of it for the first time who hadn't seen anything and started playing it, they were like, yeah, this is dark, this feels right. But for the gameplay sake, we wanted an art style that supported, all the kind of gameplay we wanted. It's also worth mentioning that, what we showed at WWI really is a very early game content. It's, first act dungeon, first act environments. And we made a conscious effort to make sure that the tone gets worse. One of the things that we really want to tell a story of, basically the coming apocalypse. And it works best if there's a contrast, if things get worse in Act 2 and Act 3 and Act 4, and then, and visually as well as just story-wise, then it makes a big difference on kind of how the tone feels. It feels like you get the nice contrast, a contrast between kind of, an idyllic world, even though I wouldn't call any Diablo world that we've created idyllic. But for Diablo, it's probably idyllic. And then, at the end, just hell let loose. That doesn't mean we're going to back off from color. It doesn't mean that we're going to back off from kind of the stylization that we're going for. But it does mean that, people are probably going to see some environments that feel tone-wise a lot more menacing than what we've showed so far.
Perfect. And I think people are going to look forward to BlizzCon's coming up. Obviously, we'll be showing something new there. What it will be, I don't know. But I wanted to thank Jay for coming out and talking to us.
No problem.
This has been Bashiok for the special edition BlizzCast wrapping up WWI. Thanks for listening.
BlizzCast, your official Blizzard podcast.